I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looks so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks. She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
I looked at her and it's like I'm looking at a picture of my wife from 20 years ago. It's incredible.
How are ordinary women across America looking years younger? They've discovered the proven breakthrough called Hydroxytone. It visibly reduces wrinkles, tightens skin, and makes frown lines disappear from view. See for yourself by requesting a risk-free trial of Hydroxytone today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at this year's Emmy Awards. Find out how you can try Hydroxytone free for 30 days and shed years from your appearance.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your risk-free trial of Hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-609-3989. But hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-609-3989. 1-800-609-3989.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto. I can't even pronounce my own name, Segretto. And this the special edition of Franchise Today. My guest is renowned psychologist and best-selling author of Profitable Partnerships, Greg Nathan. Greg and his team of psychologists at the Franchise Relationships Institute have spent the past 20 years researching the science of successful relationships. If you haven't heard Greg speak as of yet, I highly suggest you listen to today's special edition, as well as be able to see Greg at his upcoming Franchise Relationships boot camps and during the IFA convention. Greg is usually speaking as well. Working with hundreds of franchise systems around the world, Franchise Relationships Institute has developed some remarkable tools and models to help franchisors create profitable partnerships. Greg is live with me today from Australia to talk franchise relations and about his upcoming event, Profitable Partnerships Franchise Relations Bootcamp, to be held September 23rd and 24th in Dallas, Texas, and then again in Denver, Colorado on October 4th and 5th. Greg, as always, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thanks, Paul. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, Greg, let's just cut to the chase. Many franchisors do try to keep their franchisees involved, but are often frustrated when franchisees are either not interested or just turn their backs on new ideas and new initiatives. So, Greg, let's talk today about how to get franchisee buy-in on these type of programs and of course, well, everything. And, of course, I'm also anxious to talk today about your upcoming franchise relations boot camps. So the $168,000 question, as we say in the States, you know, how do we get franchisee buy-in on new programs?
Was that $168,000?
I think it was $168,000. That's correct. And I don't know if that's U.S. dollars or Australian dollars.
Okay. The exchange rate's moving up and down a bit. Okay. Well, look, I just want to pick up on something, Paul, that you said earlier about sometimes franchisees aren't interested. I think the first assumption that it's helpful to make is franchisees are always interested. But we need to come back to what are they interested in. And I think, with the franchisor hat on, sometimes we get so preoccupied with our agenda that we forget about the franchisee's agenda. And that's one of the problems, because they're feeling that their agenda is not being attended to or listened to. And what is their agenda? Well, they want to be successful. That's why they bought into the business. So I think if we can, our first point really needs to always come back to the franchisee's goals and aspirations and their definition of success. And that is not always just about the money.
Right.
Franchisees, yeah. And I think you understand that, Paul. We've spoken about this before. Look, if the franchisee is not making money, this is a problem, obviously, and the business is not sustainable, and people will get stressed and angry and frustrated. But once the franchisee has reached break-even, they're paying their basic costs, they're paying themselves a wage, and they're getting that financial anxiety out the way, other needs kick in. There's a need to influence. There's a need to make a difference in their local communities. They like to feel that they're respected, as fellow business people in the network and so on. So we've got to take into account a whole range of psychological drives when we're trying to engage the franchisees. But of course, the primary one where we start is the franchisee making adequate money to meet their needs and expectations? So when we're sort of trying to engage franchisees in a change or a new initiative, I think the starting point would be, how does it stack up financially from the franchisee's point of view, and have we thought through their concerns and issues around that?
Sure. I mean, certainly franchisees have to be interested in any new program that comes down the pike. And if it's not something that's going to be financially rewarding or working towards that goal, then certainly there won't be any interest. But I think you, as you often do, make a great point really about the interdependency of the relationship and making sure that the franchisor understands the franchisee's goals, and hopefully franchisee understands franchisor goals and the brand's goals, so that they are working together towards common goals for mutual benefit. And I think that's the key. And you're right, as many franchisors that do say they try to keep their franchisees involved, and I don't understand why they're not taking advantage of this program. Why won't they embrace this program? And yet the program is so far off in left field that it has nothing to do with the franchisee making money or of interest to the franchisee, that, God, we could only assume that they wouldn't want to be involved in that program. So I'm sure the common goals have to be established from day one, coming out of the box right after they sign their first franchise agreement. And I'm sure you agree with that, correct?
I do. And this issue, there's a couple of things you've touched on there, Paul. The first one is about expectations. And I think it's helpful to review expectations regularly, not just at the beginning of the relationship. So in the boot camp, for instance, I'll be teaching a technique of reestablishing expectations between the franchisee and the franchisor. And I think that needs to be done at least every year in a face-to-face conversation, because we call it the psychological contract. See, we have a legal contract, which is the franchise agreement, but that doesn't define the relationship. It's like saying your marriage is defined by your marriage certificate, and that's ridiculous. So the relationship is really the expectations and the feelings and the beliefs that people have about what they're going to get out of this business relationship. And sometimes we need to sit down and just ask the questions, what do you expect from us? And really listen. And often a lot of stuff comes out and you're thinking, wow, that I missed that totally. Or what the person's saying is totally unreasonable. And because they've got this unreasonable expectation of what they want from you, they're getting frustrated, but it's never been spoken about. So, a franchisee might say, well, look, I expect you to help me staff my business, because I was led to believe you were going to help me with my HR and staffing. And you might say, hang on a minute, you're responsible for the staffing of your business. What we can do is help you with tools and systems to recruit and so on, but we're not going to come in and do the interviews for you, and we're certainly not going to provide you with replacement staff when you go on holidays. This is just one example of hundreds that I've heard where, a franchisee may have an unrealistic expectation. But if we flip it around the other side, Paul, and we say, well, what are the expectations the franchisor has for the franchisee? And if the franchisor listens to the franchisee's needs and expectations, then they're in a position to say, okay, I now want to talk to you about my expectations of you. And when the franchisor says, well, look, I expect you to, for instance, refurbish your store and spend maybe up to $100,000 on a refit, which is a great example of a change or an innovation,
mm-hmm.
the franchisee may then turn around and say, that's totally ridiculous. I would never do that. Like, I invested in the business and, you know, I had my fit-out costs up front. There's no way I'm going to spend that money on the business. And the franchisor might say, well, hang on. That's in your franchise agreement. The franchisee might say, well, I never really read that, or I might have read it, but I never really took it on board because I never thought you would ask me to do this. So these sorts of conversations about, well, what do we expect of you, and really listening and talking and negotiating need to happen regularly. So that was the first point I just wanted to make in terms of what you were saying earlier. The second thing is about the franchise or making announcements about new initiatives, and there's a disconnect between the franchise or believes the franchisees aren't interested. What's not happening often is an opportunity for discussion or dialogue between the two. And I'll give you an example. I was at a conference just very recently, just in the last few weeks, and the franchise or marketing vice president was rolling out a new advertising campaign. It looks like they'd spent a lot of money repositioning the brand and came up with this very creative television advertisement. And this guy just talked about it for about 20 minutes about the research they'd done and why they'd come up with the thing, then showed the advertisement to the franchisees, and then basically said, oh, what do you all think? And they're all sitting there stunned. And he took that to mean agreement. You know, that's a big mistake. Never take silence to mean agreement. And
sure.
Then he said, oh, great. Okay, well, thanks for coming. And I'm going to close the session now. Now, that advertising campaign was so revolutionary, so different to anything they'd ever seen. They were just sitting there in a state of shock. And
wow.
So I could guarantee, I was sitting in the back of the room thinking, there is no way they're going to buy into this. They're going to resist this. They're going to fight this. It's just that they're still getting their head around it. And sure enough, you know, after the session closed down, out in the lobby, all the mumbling and the grumbling starts to emerge, and this wave of resistance starts to come up about, we didn't understand it, we don't think it's going to help us sell more product, we just think it's rubbish. So what was needed there is probably 2 hours of very carefully crafted facilitation between the franchisee group and the marketing manager to flesh out what are your concerns and thoughts, and that's the way that you get people on board, not by sort of presenting them with a whole lot of stuff and just assuming that they're going to accept it.
Absolutely. I agree with you there.
Mm.
And, you know, in the first point you were making, based on what I had said, I heard loud and clear expectations. And in a lot of what you were saying, you know, I was thinking about and thinking of different franchise organizations where I've seen, you know, various things happen with respect to falling short on expectations and certainly coming at it from something that they've never heard before. And like you said in point number two, they sat there in astonishment, just silent. And certainly,
I'd love it when I've experienced this so many times, Paul, where people are rolling out new initiatives and changes, and the people on the receiving end of the change actually go into a state of shock and go quiet, and the other person assumes that this means agreement.
Yeah, well, we all know what happens with assume, you know. But, you know, the thing with expectations that always seems to bewilder me, for lack of a better word, is getting out of the box, meaning as soon as the franchisee signs the franchise agreement and remits his franchise fee. And it seems like there's a typical disconnect as to what the expectations are moving forward at that point. And I think, and I talk a lot of time about the having a smooth transition coming out of that franchise sales process and now into the operations process, which also is the franchise relationship. And too much emphasis, or there's a lot of emphasis that are put on about, you know, this is what you get, this is the system, this is why it's so good, and it's all this fluff, and it's all this great. And a lot of it is fact. You know, we're hoping that the franchise salespeople are, you know, relating fact and are abiding by disclosure laws. And assuming that they are, there's just so much follow-up, there's so much phone call, there's so much communication. They remit the money, and then all of a sudden, there's that dead silence period. And it's not until typically that the franchisee raises his hand or calls on the phone or writes an email 2 months later and says, hello, where are we going with this? And and if that's the standard in the franchise relationship, obviously they're never going to go ahead and meet expectations, or at the very least, the people that signed the franchise are going to start to think that, wow, you know, that's all they wanted was to get my money. And even though it is all about, you know, financials, the financials have to go both ways. It has to be financially you know, beneficial for the franchisee as soon as possible. And it just seems like, you know, we're really talking about communications, open communications, and making sure that everybody's on board. And to your second point about a franchise group sitting there, no knowledge whatsoever what's going to come up on the screen, no inkling whatsoever, and all of a sudden something drastic. And, I mean, really, can you even expect them, even if they all loved it, can you really expect them to buy into it right then and there without any preempt? Like you said, you know, 2 years 2 hours of going through concerns and stuff, and probably should have been a lot of communications leading up to that. Why is communications so difficult in the franchise relationship?
It's not unique to the franchise relationship, Paul.
I know.
You know, as humans, it's our biggest challenge always. I mean, when you look around at the amount of war and pressure, you know, and problems that the human race has always faced, it inevitably has come back to communicate, miscommunication, people feeling that their needs are not being met and feeling oppressed and angry and so on. The recent riots in, you know, in Britain, you know, shocked people that what's happening there is you've got a class of young people who are feeling not listened to. I mean, there's probably some analogies there to some of the franchise rebellions that we see, where franchisees are sitting there feeling oppressed, not listened to, their needs are not being met, they may be even financially suffering and feeling not listened to, and then finally an opportunity comes along, an attorney might come along and say, hey, I can help you guys get a voice, let's all get together and show the franchisor our power, and suddenly you've got this revolution on your hands, and it can get pretty ugly. So I think it's not just, on my point, Paul, it's not just confined to franchising. I've made my life's work researching the field of communication and human psychology, and then relating it back to the nuances of the franchise relationship. But that being said, there are obviously some unique aspects about the relationship between the franchisee and the franchisor. If I can take up, Paul, what you were saying earlier about the recruitment side of things, I think systemically we can do some good, make some adjustments in how we're recruiting to avoid some of these problems. I think it's useful to involve the operations team in the recruitment process. So at the franchisee who's coming in is not just dealing with a broker or a franchise sales director, and that way the transition across, you know, when they move into the network, they've got, there's a proper handover. also the operations person can have some input into the recruitment process if they feel the person is lacking in certain areas. It doesn't mean they block the sale, but it may mean they say, look, based on my discussions with this person, they're going to need extra help up front in our induction program in certain areas. And I think that's a common sense and a sensible thing to do. And our clients that do involve the operations team heavily in the tail end of the recruitment process enjoy the benefits of that further down the track, because you don't have this disconnect happening as much. We do surveys, as you know, Paul. We do a lot of research with franchisees about their thinking and their attitudes. And one of my favourite quotes came from a guy in a cleaning franchise. He said, when I was first introduced into this franchise system, I was treated like royalty. Now I'm treated like royalties.
I think
we've got to avoid that. And, you know, there's the old saying, the higher you go, the further you fall. And the same principle exists with expectations. The more you build up somebody about how all their dreams and aspirations are going to be fulfilled, the more likely they are to be disappointed later on. So I think my good friend Joe Matthews also talks a lot about this, that we probably need to get out of the sales paradigm when we're granting franchises, and think of it more as a recruitment process, and we like to think of it more as it's the start of a relationship. It's not the end of the sale. And
that's a very good point.
So it's just a different way of thinking, because look, you know, if we're being realistic, when you're selling a car or selling a house, it's very transactional. You hand over the product or the service, and then the salesman moves on to the next prospect, and that's fine for products and things. But you know, when you sell a house, the real estate agent's not coming back and having a cup of tea at your house every month, and it's not an ongoing relationship. He's gone. So obviously, when we're going into business together, in the sense of the franchise relationship over 5 or 10 years. You've got to set it up differently. Yeah.
Sure. You mentioned Matthews, and in a recent LinkedIn discussion, he brought up an experience that he had where Franchise Business Review and Eric Stites over at Franchise Business Review had come up with a franchisee satisfaction survey in a certain industry segment that Joe happened to have a client in. And Joe went on to say that, he contacted Eric and wanted to know why the brand that he was in a relationship with wasn't at the top of the survey. And Eric responded that when it was all said and done and the evaluations were made, the two brands that did come at the top of the survey, through the franchise sales process, the franchisor basically under-promised and then over-delivered, where in the brand that Joe was representing, they over-promised and over-delivered, but it met the expectations of the franchisee, where in the first two it exceeded the expectations, and thus they were more satisfied. So it's interesting that even if you're doing it right, and as you point out in Chapter 7 of your book, Profitable Partnerships, about great expectations, it's when perception meets reality.
Mm. Yeah, my good friend and mentor, Bob Dick, he's a psychology professor. And one day I was groaning to him about something, and he said, "Greg, always remember when perception meets reality, reality always comes out second best." And he just looked at me and sort of almost as if to say, "You should know that. Stop complaining." So it is about people's behavior will follow what they believe to be true, not necessarily what the facts are. And this is very frustrating for someone who's on the other side of the relationship, who sees things differently and perhaps has more information. And thus, the need for two-way communication. Because without two-way communication, we don't get all the facts out. People are living inside their own heads. And it's probably a good point that we talk about this shock factor that we were discussing earlier, where a franchisor has a new initiative that they're wanting to roll out and has perhaps gathered a lot of good research about that. And in many cases, it stacks up well. You know, they've done their consumer focus groups. The customers are saying the brand needs, you know, to expand its range, or, you know, it's looking a little bit dowdy or old-fashioned and it needs to be improved. They've done some piloting of the new initiative. The numbers stack up well. So we've sort of ticked all the boxes from the strategy point of view. Now, what we've got to do is to consider from a communications point of view, how do we roll this out in a way that people can absorb the facts and all that good information without feeling that the change is being done to them and they're at the receiving end of some unpleasant experience? Because there's really two types of change, Paul. There's the change that we choose, which is the change that we have control over, and it's almost, if you use the analogy of driving a car, where would you rather be? Behind the steering wheel, with your foot on the accelerator, or would you rather be locked up in the trunk? Now, the other type of change is the change that chooses you, and that's the change where you feel you're in the trunk of the car. Stuff's being done to you. Now, the challenge for the franchisor is to gradually give the franchisee an experience of some sort of control and some sort of empowerment during the change process so they don't feel that sense of helplessness and loss. There's actually stages that the franchisee will move through when particularly a big new initiative is being rolled out. And the first stage, could I tell you about those?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So, because I think the listeners will find this quite interesting, and they may even want to jot this down. The first stage is this stage of shock, where people are just thinking, "What the? What did he just say? Or what did I just hear? Or what did I just see?" Because it can be so different to what their comfort zone is and what they're used to. Their brain is just trying to process. And orient itself. And they're probably thinking, I don't quite understand how this fits with my current operations. I don't quite understand how this is going to impact on my staff and on my business and so on. So what happens when you get flooded with an experience with a whole lot of new information? The brain can seize up a little bit because of the fear. And from an evolutionary point of view, we have this fight-flight response to sort of, you don't want to be sitting pondering something if you've got a dangerous animal chasing you. You want to run. So what happens is the brain shuts down and they just want to get out of the room or get out of here. I don't want to hear this. It's unpleasant. And this is where it's important we drip feed information to people in bite-sized chunks. We give people information from different sources. So some people like to read. So pre-reading is a great idea. Some people like to hear. Some people like to see. So it's good to be conveying about the initiative from a whole lot of different, using a whole lot of different communication tools and initiatives. And every now and again, pause and give people, you know, a few minutes to absorb what you're telling them. And a little technique, again, we'll be teaching this in the boot camp, Paul, is pose a question to the group, and you might get them, like if you had, say, 150 people in a room and you were announcing a new initiative, every now and again, you might just pause and say, look, I just want you to think about this last point I made and have a little chat with the person next to you, or sometimes we'll organise groups into round tables with facilitators. And we'll have trained a franchisee in each group to be the facilitator of that group. They will lead a little discussion around that little piece, and they may take some questions at that point from the room. And that way we've got this nice flow of two-way communication going backwards and forwards, and the franchisor can explain themselves a little more, particularly if they've got some good research. And it's taking people on the journey with you. Otherwise, the franchisor is going to be in a position where they're quite a way down the road and they look behind them and there's no one there. They're going, what happened to everybody? Everyone's still back at the bus stop, you know, having a cup of tea, saying, "Oh, I don't know about this. I think this is a dumb idea. I'm not hopping on the bus." So this is what we call the shock stage. The next stage, Paul, is what we call the loss stage, where people start to assess, what am I losing out on here? Because by definition, if you change, you've got to leave some stuff behind.
Right.
It is like a physical movement. And we use that language, don't we, of moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
So if you move forward, by definition, you've left behind your current comfort zone, home, position, or whatever it is. And people need to get their head around, what am I leaving behind? And is that a good thing or not? Hopefully it is a good thing, but they need to be able to reflect and ponder on that. And again, two-way communication is useful here. It's really helpful if the franchisor acknowledges that the good things about, you know, the present position, but then paints a picture that the new position is going to be even better. Because if you put down and say, oh, no, the old way was stupid and rubbish, you're kind of making a judgment call that things are not good, and anyone who was associated with the old school or the old guard or the old situation was a bit stupid. So we need to be careful, particularly this is what happens often when new leadership comes in to the franchisor, and they say, oh, we're going to do all these new things and we've got all these new initiatives, and someone says, oh, well, what about what we've been doing? Oh, no, that's stupid. That never worked. Well, what you're saying basically is everybody who associated with that by association was also stupid. So this sense of respect for the past or for the current situation can be useful in allowing people to let it go. And often, you know, when we talk about loss, we've got financial loss. If there's investment involved, there can be loss of security. There can be loss of identity. If, you know, the franchisor is rolling out a new branding position and it means that you're going to be dealing with a new type of customer, franchisees, you know, it can get quite subtle, as you can appreciate, Paul, this sense of identity and loss. And the third key stage that they're going to move through, once they get their head around the loss and how the change is going to work, is they want to negotiate and push back and sort of claw back a bit of control. So at this point, you'll probably find the franchisees getting a little bit angry. And my experience, this is a really good thing because it shows that they're engaged. They're engaging with you. They may start to push back and challenge. And at this point, it's vital that the management team holds its ground and hold fast on its strategy, because this is where the franchisee is testing you to say, are you really convinced this is going to work? And they're almost pressure testing your commitment to the change. And if you can still engage with them, listen to their questions without getting defensive, give reasonable responses, you'll find there's a watershed change in the attitude at that point, and the franchisee then moves into the sense of acceptance. Now, it's not an enthusiastic acceptance. We call it a passive acceptance. And and from there, it's up all the way, because then their enthusiasm will start to grow. So that kind of makes sense. This, you're taking people on a journey from this sort of shock and confusion through to considering what they're losing or what they could be losing, reaffirming the old values, the respecting the old way, painting a picture of how things are going to be better, and then holding your ground as they try and negotiate with you.
It's an interesting process, and I think that in itself, as you were talking about shock initially, and you were talking about, you know, thinking it out, how are we going to do this, doing it in such a way that the franchisees can go ahead and grab that information and let it sit in. And as you were going through your points, I was thinking, you know, it's really not any different than if we were running out a marketing program. We would think about the process. We would think about the target. We would explore the different ways to deliver the message. We would identify where the target communicates. We would make sure they understand the message. We would put together the strategy. We would go ahead and develop the plan to implement the strategy. And then, of course, we would execute it. And then afterwards, we would analyze and we would quantify it. And yet, at times, we come up with changes that affect everybody, and yet there's little planning that goes into it. It's thrown out there, and then, of course, we feel like we're looking at deer in the headlight because they haven't embraced the change.
No. And look, in some cases, Paul, it may be okay to plan with the franchisee. So there are different types strategically. There are different types of changes that you may choose to make. If the market's moving quickly and your competitors are closing in on you, you will often need to move quickly and decisively. And in those cases, you've got to think your strategy through, and often make decisions and roll them out. And this is where you need to announce the changes to the franchisee, but it still should be thought out carefully how you're going to announce it. But the critical thing is to have this two-way discussion with them, and it needs to be facilitated often by someone who really understands how to manage a group. I think if the franchisor tries to facilitate that two-way discussion themselves, it can turn ugly. And again, like we've got a whole bag of techniques that we'll teach at the Profitable Partnerships Boot Camp around how do you manage an emotional group of people so you get a really good result. The worst thing you can do in those situations is to open it up to like a town hall meeting. I dislike them immensely because inevitably they turn negative. At the town hall meeting, as you know, it's where the franchisor will probably announce something or other, and they hand a microphone around the audience. And all that happens is that the most vocal and angry and emotional people with a barrow to push will stand up and bore everyone else, and I've seen, people's eyes rolling as a franchisee in the audience is going on and on about how he dislikes some aspect or other of the program. Or a franchisee with good influencing skills will get up and start to rally the troops and turn everybody in the room negative against what the franchisor is saying, and then you get a battle on your hands. So there are much better ways to ensure that everybody in the room gets a say. It's done in a constructive and a civil way, and we get a result that works for everybody.
Well,
how we have those conversations is critical.
Sure, and I've seen those situations occur and blossom beyond belief. But again, going back to healthy franchise relations, that obviously it's important that the relationship be built and established from day one, even before becoming franchisees. And one statement, one title from last year, I remember there was a trifold brochure going around with respect to promoting last year's Franchise Relations Boot Camp. And I remember it, and it stuck with me, and it said, "Healthy franchise relations are the key to success in tough times." And certainly we're in tough times, especially the way the markets went up and down so much last week. And as you said, the unrest going on in London, I think it's fair to say that we're in tough times. Why is it so important that the franchise relationship be healthy in tough times as opposed to being able to get away with a less than healthy relationship in boom times?
Sure. Look, I would probably use come at it from an energy point of view, Paul, that energy and resources are limited, and we've got to use our energy and our resources wisely. So if you're running a business, you want to make every decision that you make, every interaction you have with somebody, every dollar that you spend, you want it to be to produce a result, a positive result, okay? Now, when the human mind is in a positive state and people are feeling more optimistic and feeling more confident in themselves, they will tend to use their energy wisely. And so a franchisee who's dealing with a staff member, if they're in that positive state of mind, the staff member will respond positively to them because culture is caught, it's not taught. So what I'm saying here is that a business is going to boom in tough times or good times if the franchise, if the culture is positive and constructive and people are putting their energies into good use. Now, what happens when there's strain in the relationship is people start to fester and they start to, you know, it's like you start to wallow in your juices a bit and you get caught up in your own head and you start to ruminate. And so you start to miss opportunities. If a staff member comes up to, I'm talking from the franchisee's point of view here. If a staff member comes up to you, has a complaint with a customer, and you're thinking about your problems and how unhappy you are in the franchise relationship, you'll tend to see it as an imposition. You might grumble and groan and say, oh, just tell them this or that. So the customer's going to not have a great experience. The staff member's probably going to feel a little bit sort of turned off, and the business starts to get into a negative spiral. I've seen some classic situations where, you know, I was talking to a franchise group a few months ago, and they were going through quite a major refurbishment program, and some of the franchisees were very unhappy about it. And I was just looking at their faces in the room, and I said to them, look at yourself. If I could put up a mirror and you could see yourself, you know, you would realize how ridiculous this is, because nobody in their right mind would want to do business with you in this state of mind. And they all looked at me blankly for a minute, and I said, please just stay with me. Let me explain. And I said, I reckon that you go back to your business after these meetings and you're feeling all hostile and angry, and you have a bit of a grumble to your staff, and you probably get on the phone to each other and grumble some more. And while you're on the phone grumbling, customers are coming in and out of your business and you're not attending to them. And when you do come out, you've probably got this sour look on your face and your mind's preoccupied and you're not delivering the customer the experience that's going to wow them and turn them into an advocate. And I just paused for a moment, and they started to nod their heads, and at the coffee break, a few people came up to me and said, thank you, you've turned the lights on. I've actually understood now how I'm poisoning my own culture. So it's in the tough times that we've got to have the self-discipline to keep our minds positive. And this is where the franchisor plays an absolutely critical role. And I think Napoleon made this statement. You know, Napoleon is sort of, you know, put up there as one of the great leaders. He said that leaders are dealers in hope. So an effective franchisor is giving franchisees this sense of hope and direction and security and certainty. And if the relationship is strong and the franchisor is listening to the franchisees and encouraging them in the right sort of way, then that's the way you're going to build and protect your business, because the franchisee is then going to feel more secure in themselves, and we get into a virtuous cycle rather than a vicious cycle. So it's almost like the tough times will test the quality of your relationship. And those franchise systems who have got healthy cultures and the relationship is strong, when the tough times come, it's like, bring it on, baby. because we're sticking together, we're helping each other, and we're going to win. We're going to see this thing through. Where the relationships are strained and there's a lack of trust, the tough times come and immediately people start fighting each other and blaming each other and saying, this is all your fault. Now, this is very subtle, Paul, and it's difficult to, you can't see trust. It's not like we have a little meter and you can sort of see it. We can measure it through our surveys, and that's a useful thing to do. But ultimately, trust comes through investing in the relationship with the franchisees, and the practical ways franchisors can do that is by understanding the aspirations and goals of the franchisees and demonstrating that back to them by, you know, like they say in a good conversation, a good listener will paraphrase back to the person what they're hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you do that, you know, in your interviews, you do it very well. So if the franchisor is able to paraphrase back to the franchisee, so our understanding of your needs and concerns and goals and aspirations are, and then, you know, and explains that, and that can be done at a group level or at an individual level, the franchisee has this experience of affirmation. Oh, these people get me. These people understand me. So that's the first element in building trust and commitment. The second element would be that the franchisor is demonstrating to the franchisee that they know what they're doing. So they're competent. And that is through, you know, getting evidence, market research, facts, figures, graphs to explain, look, we're all over this. We're on top of this. We understand the market has gone down. And this is what we're doing about it, and demonstrating plans and strategies back to them. And the third element of building trust and commitment is transparency and being honest. And if the franchisor is able to say, look, these are the facts at the moment of where we're at, people get actual hope from that, because it's like, well, you're being honest with me, I will work with you. But if the franchisor tries to cover up stuff and pretend that everything's great when it's not, there's a disconnect, and the franchisee will see through that and say, hang on a minute, you're telling me everything's fine, but we know everything's not fine. So how can I trust you? So
right.
It's an interesting paradox here that by stating everything is not fine, however, we have plans in place to deal with it, and what we need you to do is work with us on these things, the franchisee is far more likely to come on the journey with you and work with you. And there has never been a problem in the history of the human race that has not been solved when people put their heads together and work together. And that's, Paul, why I'm saying that in tough times, it's absolutely more critical that the relationship is strong, communication is good.
Right, and what I see is, you know, certainly franchisors, you know, have to earn the right for people to trust them. It's based on history. It's based on what they say. But, you know, what I heard too throughout this, and I want to talk a little bit about the boot camps themselves. But the final point that I'll make is, you know, from the beginning of this conversation, which I always, as even though I've spent 25 years in franchising, I always take away something from our discussions, Greg, and they really is great material. But what I heard from this is expectations, listening, open communications, and transparency. And if franchisors would just follow those steps, those words, just keep those in their mind, I think they're on their way towards, again, emphasizing that, on their way towards developing healthy franchise relationships. And as we lead into that, we have the boot camps coming up on September 23rd and 24th in Denver, Colorado. Dallas on September 23rd and 24th, and then in Denver on October 4th and 5th. Tell us a little bit, as we've got about 10 minutes left in this special edition of franchise today. Tell us a little bit about what franchisors and franchisees can expect at the boot camp.
Sure, Paul. Look, I don't want to just turn this into an advertisement, so I want to actually give your listeners value of like a taster, I guess, of some of the things that they will learn. But good intentions is a starting point, but it's not enough. So I think wanting to do the right thing and wanting to follow these principles of good two-way communication and transparency is a starting point, but you've got to have the skills and the competence to implement this stuff. Otherwise, you can make a hash of it. And I've seen cases, Paul, where franchisors, for instance, have tried to consult with franchisees, but they've done a bad job at it. And all they've done is build expectations up that people are going to be listened to, and therefore what they've said to the franchisor, the franchisor is going to do. And then they get disappointed when the franchisor doesn't follow through on the feedback. So if we talk about consulting with franchisees, you've got to set it up in the right way that because I'm consulting with you, it doesn't mean I'm going to do what you're suggesting. You
sure.
get the difference there? And so we will teach franchisors, for instance, how to set up a consultation process where the franchisees feel listened to, but and we started this conversation around expectations. The franchisees don't expect that the franchisor is going to run around and do everything that they've suggested. So it's having that conversation where you say, I'm listening to what you're telling me. I take you seriously. I respect you. However, we have 500 people in this franchise system and we can't, and it's possible we're going to get 300 different opinions. Obviously, it would be insanity if we tried to implement everybody's opinion. It's impossible. So we will make the final decision here. Just be rest assured that that decision will be made having taken into account everything you've told us. Now,
sure.
people will respect that and respond very positively to that. However, if you do it in a half-baked way and you say, tell us what you think, and you don't get back to them, and set it up properly, they just end up more frustrated. So the point here is having the techniques and the scripts and the way to set these things up. So we'll teach that, Paul. The other thing we'll be teaching is if you're having a two-way conversation with franchisees, there's almost a recipe on how to construct your responses where the franchisees will experience your responses as genuine, and hopefully they will be genuine, honest, and they will accept unpleasant news as well. So, I'll teach the franchisors, if they've got to give bad news to a franchisee, how to do that in a way where the franchisee will accept it, even though they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And, sorry, Paul?
Yeah, I think that's a very strong statement there, and it's something that, definitely should be taught because
yes.
a lot of people like to hear bad news, and certainly a lot of people don't like to deliver bad news, but it is all about being honest and transparent, and sometimes you have to say the bad news.
You've got to say it, but it's how you set it up that makes the difference. Otherwise, the person can experience that you're just picking on me.
Yep.
Or you're just being a bully. And obviously, and often that's not the case. And this is this difference between perception and reality. So being able to have those conversations, I think the trendy word these days is having difficult conversations. A lot of people are using this. We will teach the people in the boot camp how to have a difficult conversation. So you come out of it feeling good about yourself and the franchisee also feels that it's been constructive and feels respected. And avoiding those discussions is deadly in a business relationship because things will fester and, can get blown out of proportion. Particularly, often attorneys and lawyers are bought into these disputes prematurely when the dispute could be sorted out through straight talking and the attorneys can tend to complicate things by bringing in technicalities when the issue is often about someone just feels they're not being heard and not being listened to. So we'll teach that. Paul, we'll also talk about recruitment quite a bit. At the moment, we are conducting probably the biggest study that's ever been conducted in the world about what drives franchisee success. It's a global study, and we're about to launch it actually into the USA as well and get USA franchisors involved. But we're collecting data on what are the attributes that franchisees need in order to succeed, and we're being able to scientifically prove the impact of these attributes on performance, on, you know, profitability, performance, sales performance. And one of the performance measures we use when we're talking about franchisee success is citizenship. Like, how well does the franchisee fit into the franchise system and how well do they participate? So I'm going to be giving feedback to the group, you know, in the boot camp on the results of our research today. I think they'll find that very interesting, and how that translates to your recruitment processes. How do you set up your interviews with your franchisees to find out exactly what you need to know from them so you can set up their training and induction in a way that's going to ramp them up quickly for success? So that's another element of the boot camp there, Paul. We'll talk a lot about leadership and the qualities of effective franchise leadership, and that also leads us into culture, because culture comes, the biggest influence on a culture is the leadership, and
sure.
We'll talk about how to build a healthy franchising culture, you know, that culture where people do want to pull together, they do want to work together, they're prepared to take a few hits for longer term gains. I think that's a sign of a healthy franchise culture. You know, the franchisees recognise it swings and roundabouts, and that even though, you know, a new initiative may not benefit them, their particular region on the short term, they are part of a bigger picture, and in the longer term, it's far better that we all stick together and roll these things out as one group. So we'll
sure.
talk about the cultural aspects as well. And, Paul, I also like to touch on field visits, because the field consultants or the field managers, these are the people who are dealing directly with the franchisees, usually on a monthly basis. They're out there in the field. They're like the soldiers out on the battlefield. These people need strategies and techniques and processes to ensure each visit counts and makes a difference. And particularly in tough times, what we've noticed is that the franchise systems that have ramped up their field support are doing better. So, because the franchisees aren't feeling as isolated.
Right.
So we'll teach how to structure a field visit, the steps involved, the qualities of a good field manager, the competencies that field consultants need to develop in themselves. And that's actually one of my favourite modules in the boot camp. And that's one we get a lot of positive feedback on. So that's just a bit of a touch, Paul, on some of the stuff.
It sounds like it's going to be a very strong event for franchisors and franchisees alike. And as we're getting close to the top of the hour, Greg, I do want to thank you for being my guest today and for sharing great information about franchise relationships and, of course, about the upcoming event. And I'd like to tell everybody the dates again. The events are in Dallas, Texas, September 23rd and 24th, and then again in Denver, Colorado, October 4th and 5th. For more information and to reserve your seat, please visit the website at franchisespeakers.com. There's a section right on the right-hand side of the page, or call Katrina Mitchell at speak at 720-304-3710. Greg, we have less than 2 minutes. Do you have some parting words for today?
Yeah, look, I'd just like to acknowledge Katrina Mitchell, who puts these boot camps together. She does an excellent job at looking after the needs of participants. So I think if you're, like, I know some companies are sending their entire field team along to the boot camp. And what Katrina does very well, she does like a diagnostic on what are the needs of the company. And then she brings that back to me. So I can build into the program, we can customize the program a little around the needs of the participants, and it helps me prepare. So I'd just like to acknowledge her excellent work in putting the boot camp together, and to also say that during the boot camp, participants will have an amazing opportunity to network and share ideas with each other. What often happens during this sharing is it gets lost, but we capture it all and we feed it back to people. So during the roundtables, we'll be recording all the good ideas. I'm going to teach some techniques on how to do that. We type all this stuff up and we feed it back to the group. So people can go away with, you know, up to 120 take-home ideas that they can implement immediately.
Sure. And
so that's very, very powerful and very practical.
Sure.
You know, to drive,
well, thanks to all for listening to today's special event on Franchise Today. Until next time, I'm Paul Segretting, wishing you all the best, the very best, this great thing called franchising. Franchise Today is out.